All right, so we're back in C++ world again. Ciao, Ale.
Ciao.
How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
So introduce yourself again.
Sure. My name is Ale Contenti, and I'm the C++ dev lead for the libraries team.
Uh-huh.
So C++ libraries dev lead. And we work on the libraries that are the C runtime, ATL, MFC, STL, and a bunch of interop libraries that where we basically fill the bridge between native and managed code.
Excellent.
It's kind of the set of libraries we work on.
And we've had you on before.
Yep.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Who are you?
I'm Louis Lefrenier, and I work on the Phoenix, which is the Microsoft's new framework for code generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked before that on the previous VC compiler backend for many years.
Yeah, I remember that from an earlier conversation. I think it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
Compiler backend.
Yeah, we talked about it would be in compiler optimization.
Absolutely. So what are we going to talk about today? What's going on?
We're going to talk about exception handling. So I've done a lot of exception handling work over the on the compiler over the years, and
Ella's
been working on the C runtime side of it quite a bit, too.
It's always mixed between the two.
Right.
And one of the tag of Louis is a Louis l'exception.
That's right.
You should say it better, right?
I should have brought that.
Right. That's great. First time I went to this office, I see this, oh man, this guy is the exception guy.
It was a guy that had done tags for everybody for fun and replace our name tags
with exceptions?
Just names that had like something funny about them. And because I've been working on exception handling a lot. And I'm French-Canadian. My tag was Louis l'Exception.
That's better. That's perfect.
So let's dig into exceptions a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's various types of exceptions. We're talking specifically about C++ exceptions here.
Yeah, native exception, let's say.
Or, well, more than C++ exception would be exceptions in C++ code.
Okay.
So yeah, there's the two, how we like to distinguish the two big differences for us in our exception model is the SCH type exceptions or hardware exceptions and the true C++ exceptions, ones that are done by a throw statement.
Okay.
So for on the compiler side, we do have a switch to either trying to model or add support for people that are interested in catching also the whole spectrum of exceptions, or people that just want to cache the C++ one as defined by the C++ standard.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a big difference in terms of performance. The performance impact of just focusing on the C++ one is a lot less than focusing on all of them. And we also don't recommend for most people to try to catch all the exceptions. We think that for most user applications, catching the C++ exceptions is the right thing to do if that's your error handling model and all. And for any kind of AV or any hardware exceptions,
sure,
to not try, there's basically the problems you can't really recover from those safely.
Mm-hmm.
There's security issues in trying to do that, or just correctness issues, because you get one of those exceptions. What it means is that your memory is most likely corrupted.
And you don't know where it happened.
You don't know what happened.
What's going on.
You don't know what happened. You don't know what. I mean, really, the memory is messed up. So it's not really the right thing to do.
The right thing to do at that point is basically to shut down the application as quickly as possible. Because, it could be a hacker that's been trying to attack your system and corrupted your memory. And if you try to continue, you just give a chance for that exploit to be successful.
So let me ask this. Is there? I mean, I remember that from discussions on various aliases. I remember Chris Broom, he used to write, who wrote basically the exception gook of the CLR, among other things. But there were always these sort of debates about catching exception, like the exception object in .NET, but the whole point is the same thing. Just
it's more
catch
of
everything.
It's more of it.
But are there cases where you might have to do that, like when multi-threading and dealing with asynchronous?
Well, catching everything, I think the only place where it's appropriate to catch everything is at the very top of your program, I'm going to catch everything, mm-hmm. and I'm going to just shut down right now. If there's anything that I don't know about that leaked, mm-hmm. The other exception handling that I have, then I'm going to just shut down the application yeah. and die.
Okay. But if you think about it, it's what we kind of already do, right? So right. the CRM time, you do an int main, and you start your program there. But mm-hmm. around the CRM time is actually calling your main function. And mm-hmm. around that call, it puts a try catch, basically, and of ACH try catch. So it catches every C++ exception you leak from that, mm-hmm. and every SCH exception you leak from that. And what do? For the C++ exception, we have to call terminate. Then terminate calls abort, and the standard C++ tells you that.
Okay.
And when we call abort, we call Watson. That's what we do.
Okay.
And if there is an SCH exception, then again we call Watson again. So basically we do that report. The Watson is going to put up a message and say, hey, this program died, mm-hmm. and we are sending the information to Microsoft. We are also checking on Watson, maybe if we have some report. I mean, basically sometimes we see if there is the same call stack coming over and over and over, is maybe caused by a certain behavior, and you should probably apply a patch. A patch is available to fix this problem. So there is a lot of mechanism around for you. So that's why doing the catch dot 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 at the end,
right? Not that.
It's not a good idea.
I mean, it's not useful in the end. It just needs to be more work for you, but you don't get so many benefits most of the time.
It's still better to let the exception go through and let the CRT then call Watson. Mm-hmm. To get the Watson report. So basically, actually, the only time it makes sense to have catch dot 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 is when you're going to do something, and then you're going to rethrow that same exception afterwards to let somebody else handle it, CRT, if it's something you don't know. And that's kind of the equivalent of a try finally in C++. Mm-hmm. Since we don't have try finally, you can do a catch dot 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 with a rethrow. It's not quite exactly the same semantic, but somewhat similar to a try finally.
So what is, let's talk a little bit about the anatomy of an exception.
Okay. Do you want?
Yeah.
If you want. We can.
The board is always good.
Right. I always look good. Because I cannot talk so much. So should we do I think we should do something like show the two different exceptions.
Yeah, what would be interesting, I think, is to show the two pass.
Yes.
The two pass handling of exceptions. Well, where we do the one pass to look for a handler, then the pass where we run the finally and destructors.
We can start with a function. Where basically, should we throw a C++?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. We can just we can do for example, a standard. I don't know. Out. Of range exception. That is usually when you do a vector, for example, throws this exception.
Okay.
When you have a vector and you are going out of range, then standard vector automatically throws this exception usually. And at a certain point, we can call another function again that calls this. Do you want to put a try catch here?
We could have a try finally that ignores it, a try accept that ignores it, and then a try catch that catches it.
Okay. A try underscore underscore, you want?
Right.
Okay.
Just to show the
The two type of exception.
And the first pass, having the filter that runs.
Yeah, try accept is a cool pattern. I wish we had that in managed code sometimes. Well, because you don't really have that in C#, right?
Not in C#, but in CLI we do.
Of course. Well, because you guys have C++. You get the best of both worlds.
And then, anyway, we're going to call this. And we can do another one. We can do another function where we actually put a normal C++ try catch. And we just call G. Or do you want to call F again? We can call G.
It doesn't matter.
What do we do? Yeah, I don't remember.
Zero.
Zero. They continue.
There's a T in that except.
Yeah. There you go. Catch. We can catch my exception. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because we just save it.
Yeah.
There you go. And okay. Then we can do another main somewhere. When we finally call our H function. And we are going to see here what the, actually the CRT does. And we call what.
Okay.
So right. I give it to the boss.
Louis l'exception.
So yeah, when we get an exception here, the first thing that the operating system is going to start basically on the stack. We're going to have main. I'm going to write my stack there.
So H.
H.
G.
And G. And F. So we're pointing here on the stack. The operating system is going to look for a handler for the exception that was thrown here. So we're going to look in F if there's any handler for this exception, and there's no try block. So then we come to G, and we look, and we're within the scope of a try block, so we're going to call the filter for that exception handler. That filter returns 0, which means I'm not going to accept this exception. So then we're going to keep going to H, we're within the try block. We look at this filter to see if it's going to accept the exception. So there's, along with the exception, there's the type. There's an RTTI type as part of the information.
It's a big structure, basically the exception. You put a lot of information inside. This draw is actually is calling a CXX throw, something like that.
CXX throw exception.
CXX throw exception. That is a function inside the CRT that fills up this huge. Structure and fills up all the information and knows where it is, which type of exception it is.
Yeah. Right.
And then we match these when we create a CXX exception filter, basically, we are going to go and understand, oh, is it a C++ exception? Is it an SCH exception? And then we are going to match this information here.
Cool.
So then we do a type, we look at the RTTI, from the RTTI information, if that catch follows the type of the exception. If it does, then we go back to the top of the stack, and then we have to run all the finallys or destructors that are on that stack. So the important point to note is that the exception handling is done as a two-pass process. One pass that looks for a handler. If it's handled, then we go back and then we call all the destructors and finallys that were on that path.
Interesting.
So
what if it's not handled, but it's just a try finally? So then it's just a one pass.
If it's not handled, then the process is going to die,
and it's going to be an ugly death.
It's going to be an ugly death. The CRT will get to it actually, and guess you kill the exception at the filter in the first pass, right? In the filter, you call terminate.
Maybe, I think so.
Right.
Yes, we call terminate because we have the another exception filter that is registered by the CRT. And in that point, we recognize we can terminate only if it's a C++ exception.
Okay.
Right.
So we recognize, we again look inside the structure and say, oh, it's a C++ exception, then let's call terminate and calls abort.
And if it's not a C++ exception, you don't call terminate, but you kill the process somehow.
So
we abort.
We abort.
So I have to admit, I've seen some interesting error messages on Windows, including Vista. I'll get occasionally, maybe if I'm running IE, or maybe not, maybe somebody else's application, but there'll be sort of memory cannot be written. Is that you guys, or is that Windows? So in other words, the application crashes, and then an error comes up with something like...
kind of an AV, let's say.
Yeah, memory cannot be written.
Because we are pointing to garbage.
And
you're trying just to read from that.
So is that's Windows, though, right? That's a Windows error.
It's not the CRT that puts up that message.
Sure.
But I don't think it does it anymore. Now we just, in those cases, they just call water. So you don't see those strange messages. They're
not
kind
anymore.
Of useless anyway.
Okay, cool. I was just curious to know when I'm getting, because I remember I have seen some interesting messages that made me think it was the C++ runtime,
right,
or the C runtime. But
now Watson should be
C++ runtime error messages, but C++ runtime decided to abort this.
Cool.
Right.
Which leads into the segue of what you guys have done that's new, right?
So I guess, one of the big change in WIDBI was what do we do with the EHS switch, which is to just catch C++ exception. It used to be that that switch was just a hand for the optimizer to say, okay, well, just assume that exceptions are happening at a point of a C++ throw or a function that might be calling throw. Mm-hmm. But if a navy was being thrown, we would still run the destructors. Maybe if we had assumed that it couldn't be a C++ exception there, we would have optimized a way to code to handle that exception. Or in the try block also, if you had a try catch and we had detected it couldn't be a C++ exception there, we could have optimized the way to try catch. But if it didn't get optimized the way, then the try catch would be called, the destructors would be called. Mm. So it's somewhat random or to the users whether these things would be called or not, which was a problem. The other problem is that people that don't want to catch AVs, they don't want the destructors, they don't want these things to run, they want to die really quickly, which is the right thing to do.
Sure. Yeah.
So we changed the C runtime to make sure that if it's a C++ exception that's thrown, mm-hmm. and the function was compiled with EHS, that the destructors are not getting run and the try-catch don't catch these exceptions.
So that for those of us that live in the managed world, if the destructor doesn't get called, who's unraveling the memory mess? Is that the CRT?
Yeah, the CRT has its own heap. Okay. The CRT, at the end, when you get out of main, in a way or the other, you enter basically the CRT again. The CRT is something called kind of ini. Main CRT startup is called the function basically. That is the real entry point of the application.
Okay.
And these guys taking care of removing and throwing away the heap and so on, releasing the heap and so on.
Okay.
But usually, since your application is dying, the heap is going away with it, right? Okay. Windows is taking care of that because it's attached to you. We allocate the heap before calling main. Yeah. We do a bunch of other stuff like creating, for example, standard out, standard in, all those things that you give for granted when you arrive here. Okay. We fill up the arguments here. We initialize a bunch of kind of static variables, and then we call main, and then something bad happens, or we go to an exception filter, and maybe we call abort, or we just close everything. We close all the files, we close the memory, we close a few other things. So there's a bunch of stuff there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I want to stress again the switches that Louis was talking about. That basically, when you compile this test program, if you compile with nothing, I guess the compiler is going to tell you, hey, you're using exception. You have to tell me which type of exception you want to use. So that's usually what when I usually compile a STL program that includes vector, I always forget to put EHS, and I get 1,000,000 warnings. Say, man, what do I do? I just include vector. It's just because the compiler sees that vector and so on are throwing and so on, are using throw and catch and so on. So what we say is that we have to use, I mean, it's much better to use EHS versus the other option that is EHA.
Right.
Because it means that with EHA, this catch, is this catch or the catch dot dot dot?
The catch dot dot dot.
A catch dot 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 is gonna also, because let's say you put another try catch here.
Yeah.
You decide you want to pick up everything.
Okay.
So in this case, let's say here we catch another, I don't know, a runtime error or a logic error.
Okay.
So we don't catch it here because we are throwing an out of range. It's not a logic error, so it's going to go through, and it's going to arrive to main. It's going to arrive here in this catch dot dot dot.
Okay.
It's okay. It's a C++ exception. You can catch it and you can say, hey, something went bad in your application. I'm dying anyway.
Yeah,
that's fine. The really good thing you want to do here is you want to do a series of catch, right? You want to catch for, is what you do also in manage, right? You catch for everything you know. Or if there is a logic error, and then you say something interesting.
Sure. Or the other thing, though, the only thing I would ask here is that I think it could be argued that a legitimate pattern in this case would be to say catch, and again, manage world, which is very different, but catch exception E, and then have a series of tests. Like, if E is out of memory exception,
then do this.
Then throw up this fancy new WPF UI and play around. But just kidding. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that isn't that. But in this case, the compiler would
would do the word for you, right?
Yeah.
Would do the if for you. If you do catch and you create your own out-of-memory exception.
Sure. Don't ever do that, people.
Because if you start doing WPF stuff...
I mean, that probably actually wouldn't work after a while, right? Yeah. The machine would stop running.
Yeah. But what you do in these cases, with the people that handle these cases, what do they do? The first thing they do at the beginning of main, and they allocate a huge chunk of memory.
Okay.
And then when they get the first out-of-memory exception, they usually release this memory. And so the process has a little bit of memory. Yeah, but it's not so.
Not a very good idea.
Better to try to die quick.
Yes.
Yes.
In this case.
There are different type of... I mean, C++ is good because it lets you do a lot of type of application.
Mm-hmm.
The mainline application, they should never care about out of memory exception or stuff like... I mean, if there is a real problem in your program where you're dereferencing a P in this point, and here you're having an AV, and then, I mean, there is nothing you can do here, right? Your memory is being corrupted. You should just give up.
Not in this case, but if it was unknown what P points to, then it could be.
Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah, correct.
You could have had a buffer of run, basically, that overran a bunch of stuff that was important and then hit an AV when it got to an invalid address, and then you try to recover from that and then run with that corrupted memory.
Yeah.
So that's why now with EHS, the destructors are not ran, the cache is not going to catch anything, so run basically as little code as possible before you shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one interesting point to mention is the EHS switch is not available in CLI. And when we compile with /CLR, the CLR team actually didn't believe in /EHS and didn't want us to.
Well, yeah, the exception wars. Well, they're just the different exception models, right? I mean.
Right, and I guess that was before we had the more defined EHS model, which was not, didn't have variability depending on the optimization. I think that was the part the CLR team really didn't like, especially in the JIT world. You don't want the JIT to. You get a patch and your JIT now is JITing your code differently than before, and you have different program behavior.
It's not that they were against EHS. I would imagine the CLR code was compiled with the EHS switch, huh? No?
It's
written in C++.
But CLR is a good example, maybe. Yeah. It's such a low-level component, the CLR. You're right, it's such a low-level component. Mm-hmm. That's one of the few good examples, maybe EHA can make a little bit more sense.
Interesting point is actually, it was compiled EHS in Everett, Whitby broke it, and then they had to switch to EHA. And right after they changed it to EHA, they got a bug report in Everett because there was a destructor that wasn't being called because they were using EHS instead of EHA. So they should have been using EHA all along. But for system-level code where you really...
But even so, you can use EHS and then do this extra, right?
Right, but the fact that the problem is the CLR actually introduces calls in the middle of your frame, and if the user app is trying to throw AVs, well, and the CLR is right in between of it, it has to be able to unwind through the CLR code.
Sure.
So they don't really have the choice because of the model that that they've implied in the framework. They have to use the same model for compiling themselves.
Yes, super. Excellent. Very nice entry from Chris Bloom about exception.
Yes. Remember that?
Right.
Yeah. His blog is still there.
It's still
one of the best, man.
Yeah, yeah. One of my reports just printed out.
Outstanding. You hear that, Chris? I doubt he's watching this. It's amazing. You wrote that like three or 4 years ago?
Yes, it was 4 years ago.
When blogging was the in thing.
You wrote a lot. I remember a guy commenting saying, write a book, man.
Totally.
It's too long.
Well, now he's a distinguished engineer working on a top secret project. Someday we'll be able to cover it.
Yeah.
But so what else is going on here?
Another thing we could talk about is performance of exception handling code.
Absolutely.
And we can look at both the x86 and the AMD64 model.
Which color are you doing?
Well, let's see. What should I start with? I guess I should start by... I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to write something, what I'm going to write.
Yeah.
But I guess we should explain how on Win32 how exception handling is implemented.
Yeah.
Sure.
At the SCH level.
Because also the C++ exceptions, they are basically SCH exception with just a little bit more information in it. Mm. We are using the same model. Right? We are calling Windows function to unwind the stacks and so on.
Okay.
So, yeah. But, I mean, they give you all these extra functionality, you know.
Sure.
So, yeah. So, yeah. Now we're just going to explain how we did it.
So, yeah, let's just modify Ali's example. So, we have a function here that has an object. There's a function here that has nothing that requires exception handling. Here we have a function with a try catch, and then we have main, which does not have any exception handling. There. So, on Win32, the way exception handling is implemented is that we have a linked list at fs:0 that keeps a chain of all the frame on the stack, all the live frames on the stack that have some exception handling information. So for this program, we'd have fs:0, which would point to a struct on the stack that describes the exception handling information for F. Mm. And F has exception information not because of the throw, but because of this object that needs to be destructed if we get an exception in this function.
Okay.
So that struct has a next pointer, which would point to the exception information of H, because H also has exception handling information to describe the try-catch.
Explicit one.
That's it. And that would point then to the main CRT startup information that's in here.
Try-catch, yeah.
Right.
Kind of, yeah.
So when there's when we do a throw, we call it CXX throw exception, which end up calling into the OS, RTL raise exception, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then the OS will start at fs:0, and once it's doing its first pass, it will look at this chain that describes the exception handling information in F. It says there's no try block here, so it's going to try looking for a try block with the filter to accept this exception, then it'll walk that same list again to run the destructors and try finallys. So this is how it's done on x86, well, on Win32.
Yeah.
The problems with that is that we need to allocate that struct on the frame for everybody that has exception handling. So setting up that struct is actually not cheap. There's quite a few instructions that are needed to set up, link yourself to the fs:0.
Every time you enter F.
Every time you enter F. Set the next pointer. And most of the information is actually about F, is actually in the side structure, because that's pretty much static. It doesn't change. Mm-hmm. But every time we enter F, we have to relink that struct that has a pointer to this info and those links as well. Then when we leave F, we have to unlink ourselves from the... from that linked list. So that has an overhead. The other thing we need to do is we need to keep track within the function about the state of the program within that function. So if we had another object here, obj2, we would want to know that once we throw here, that we need to go and destroy obj, but not obj2, because it hasn't been constructed yet.
Okay.
The way we keep track of that is part of this struct, there's a little slot that describes the state that we're in F. So we would enter in state -1. Once we've constructed obj, we would go in state 0. Then we would construct obj2, we would go in state 1. Then we'd have the destructor for obj2 eventually that the compiler would generate, which would bring us back to state 0, which state 0 means obj is alive, but not obj2. So once we've run this destructor, we go back to that state, and then we'd have the destructor for obj, which would bring us back to state minus one, which means there's nothing going on. So the compiler has to insert all these updates also to set that current, that little state to the right, to the current state. Okay. So that has also some overhead. So the one of the advantage of the EHS switch is that if we know that a function doesn't have any exception handling, so doesn't require any... if we know a function cannot... Well, let's go more precise. If we know that an object cannot have any exceptions during the lifetime of its object, we don't need to keep track of its state. So like in this function, there cannot be any exceptions between the constructor of obj2 and its destruction. Okay. So we can get rid of the state updates for obj2. Now, if we didn't have the throw statement, it could not be, and we know the constructor for obj and the destructor for obj cannot throw a C++ exception, then we could actually get rid of all the exception handling for f. That gets rid of all the state updates, and then it gets rid also of the setting up of that that EH frame on the stack and the on the declaring unlinking of that EH frame.
It's so okay. Optimization you can do, yeah. Right. So there are always two costs when you think about exception. There is the cost of kind of a static cost of just your normal code. How much does it cost to have exception handling there? And then when you actually throw, that's an extra cost, right? But the throwing cost, we don't care so much about it because you should throw only in exceptional scenario, right?
Exactly.
Right. So if that's a little bit more expensive, it's not a big deal. But if the normal flow of the sequence of the problem is a little bit more expensive, that's what, I mean, the backend and Luis are trying to optimize at the best. Right? And you're trying to remove every extra call, every extra chaining, non-chaining information.
Excellent.
So, The focus is really on optimizing, as you were saying, the normal path, not the exception path. Yeah. And because we want to assume that users are not throwing exceptions very often. You shouldn't be throwing in exceptions because...
Yeah, you should do that. Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, there was somebody on an internal alias, I think it was Rico, that mentioned...
Rico Mariani?
That, as a rule of thumb, you should be able to make your app do a beep whenever you throw an exception. And if your app is too annoying to use, you're throwing too many exceptions.
Sure.
Just for moving the mouse, maybe that's not
something's
a good
wrong.
Thing. If you just do it when you kind of find one file that is really useful for you, then it's okay to do a beep there and just throw an exception. Darn. Okay,
so, I mean, you guys get a lot of stack traces, right? I mean, and dumps. And
yeah.
So are you seeing sort of an abuse of exceptions?
Is it We have seen it some places where people are doing loops with their exceptions, where they try something, and if there's an AV, they'll modify something a little bit and restart at the beginning and try again, and, oh, now we failed like five times, go do something else.
And the performance sucks a little bit, and then we go and see and what that is going on. Or sometimes you even see all these first chance exceptions being thrown, but then handler, and you see the output debug spew that is full of this first chance exception, and you start saying, is that the real good, I mean, it's a really good thing to do, that's not right, so.
So, I mean, let's talk about that then. I mean, when what's the right pattern? I mean, it's like...
Well, so that's the hard question.
It's a hard question.
Because basically, I mean, you can do error code for doing your error handling, or you can do exception handling. And I think neither of them is perfect, and they both have their right usage scenario. Sometimes it's more convenient to use exceptions, and it's the appropriate thing to do, and sometimes error code are going to be more efficient, and H results.
There are so many things. At least, I remember I was just reading Herb Sutter and Alexandrescu's book, and at least they say, set up some guidelines and stick to them, right? Rigidly to them.
Right.
So that's the good behavior. I mean, you don't have to be, I mean, religious about never throwing exception or always throwing exception. But at least, I mean, of course, use exception only for exceptional reasons, throw exception, and then again, programs are really complicated sometimes. Not just, I mean, HF main and that's it, right?
Sure.
You have a module that talks with a COM module that probably was written 10 years ago and nobody has the sources anymore, and then maybe you interop with some managed code here. So all the different boundaries have kind of different they want to do different things. Maybe inside the COM module, they are using exception, but they catch them at the end, and they just return an H result when the file is not found. Mm. They just return Ian's core error, right?
Sure.
And that's the right thing to do in COM, right? Yeah. Instead, when you are completely C++, you can maybe, these are two C++ modules, you can, I mean, pass exception between the two modules, that's fine as well.
Sure.
So there are all these things to keep in mind, and it's not easy. Even in Microsoft, everybody has a different opinion.
Sure.
It's a big company. But at least the few guidelines, I mean, for example, that book has very good guidelines in general. And okay. For example, if you don't have any, if you want inspiration, that's one of the places to start.
Mm-hmm.
You can always ask us. I mean, we can tell you as much as we want.
Absolutely.
And we have, I guess, a lot of people. We always have a recurring threads, mail threads about right. exception. What
sure. But I mean, one of the great things about being passed back a data structure full of really useful information versus just an H result number,
yes,
or
yes.
I mean, it's like you can actually debug.
Right. Yes. And that's the thing. It's sometimes exception handling seems like a clean way, but then there's to come back to the perf on x64, the way of handling the exceptions at the OS level is very different. Mm. We have to get rid of the overhead that we have on Win32 of having to set up that the H frame on the stack as you enter and leave the functions and linking yourself on the linked list, and also having all these state updates whenever there's something new in your program that happened. Instead, we have a static model for exception handling, which has basically a table for the function, and it works by IP addresses. So we know that at this IP address, we're going to be in state 0. And at this IP address, we're going to be in state 1.
And the compiler is building up this table all the time.
Right. And then there's another piece of the table which says, between this IP address and this IP address, this is the table that has all the exception handling information.
Mm.
So when you get an exception, you basically check the IP address of where the exception happened.
Interesting.
And you can find all the information about it.
Yeah.
And the hard part, well, the somewhat hard part, is to go to the next function on the stack.
Mm.
So you need to be able to find the return address on the stack for F such that you know that you were called from G. That table basically has the information, the pdata has information about how to unwind the current frame so that you can find the return address for the next frame. That's really what's missing on Win32 for us to be able to use that same model. There's not a reliable way to unwind a function to find the return address. The debugger tries and most of the time gets it right, but for exception handling, most of the time it's not good enough. It has to be
exactly
100%
correct.
Accurate. So, and because there's all legacy code that we wouldn't be able to unwind reliably on Win32, we have to stick with the linked list model. The advantage of that model is that there's no cogen overhead for the non-exception case, except for the impact that exception handling has on optimizations, which maybe we can talk about later.
Okay.
The downside is when you throw an exception, it's a lot more expensive because now you have, like with the Win32 model, we can skip G because there's no information. And also, going from here to here is really quick. It's just a link in the linked list. And same for main. We can skip main, and it's really quick to do so.
And, if you have 25 Gs, yeah.
Right. On Win64, if there's a lot of functions that are like that don't have any info, well, you still have to go through every single one of them to get to H.
Yeah.
And the unwinding also has to do a lot of table lookups and a lot of looking at the code. Sometimes...
This is the cost of the throwing the exception.
Right, exactly.
That should be, I mean, you're paying for throwing an exception. It's an exceptional case, so...
So that was a trade-off we took, basically. It was to optimize away the non-exception path, but it adds overhead on the exception path, which we think is the right thing to do because we think exceptions should be for
exceptional
cases.
That's the name.
Exactly.
Right? What would the name be if it wasn't the case? It would be like
it'd be
constants,
like, I don't know.
Or a lot. Yeah, whatever. Sorry.
Common error handling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that, that IP addresses are used.
Right.
I think I find that very interesting since those, I mean, IP address is guaranteed uniqueness. Why not a GUID? Why an IP address? Just out of curiosity.
Because that's where when we get an exception, we can look at what the current IP is, and that's what we start with, and uh-huh. that tells us which function we're in and what's the state within that current function.
Interesting.
So that gives us all the information we need. We don't need a GUID from there.
So are these? So when I think when I'm saying IP address, I'm thinking like in the internet world, like 142.62.76.
IP, I mean instruction pointer. That's why I got you confused.
I was like, wow, man, that's kind of trippy.
No. Yeah. When you talk to the backend people, they don't know about
IP address.
They don't use.
Hey, I got my head's full of the internet.
You know, if you see my whiteboard, it's full of C++ code. So if you go in Louis' office, it's full of IL code or CIL or assembler and so on. It doesn't write and it doesn't understand very well.
It doesn't deal with the big. Yeah, it's too far off. It's too far off.
ASM is more my level.
Yeah. Still?
Well, I don't write in ASM, but yeah.
You think in ASM?
Well, no, when I write code, the compiler is not written in assembly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So the compiler is written in C, right?
In the previous framework was written actually mostly in C, mm-hmm. With a tiny bit of C++. The new Phoenix compiler is all written in C++.
Nice.
Coming to the 90s.
Now, are you using exceptions? But only in exceptional cases.
Yes. Only in exceptional base case when we... Yeah, it's only when we're going to give up or when we're going to die, we throw an exception.
Sure.
Or some internal states are messed up.
Right.
And you mm-hmm. see 8. Yeah, I mean, it should be 7.
It's usually we hit a fatal error or an assert or something like that. Yeah. Or an AV. Sometimes happens. Shouldn't, but...
Sure.
So the fact you're using IPs here is because also the optimization, you can't do too many optimizations around, in a sense, right? Mm. I mean, because when you can't do too many optimizations with this table approach.
The unwinding, it does. There's basically a struct that describe how to unwind this frame, and that kind of limits what kind of frame optimizations you might want to do. It only supports these type of frames, and if you wanted to do a new frame that's not supported, we can't do it. So there's some little bit of limitation when you were using that model. The number of limitation depends on the complexity of that struct.
Yes.
On AMD64, the struct is fairly simple, and so we're kind of we have to follow the guidelines. On i64, actually, the struct is really complicated and handles all sorts of wild frames. It's just different designs.
Sure.
Yeah. Chips.
So let me ask this question since we're in the age of, you know, chips are going to be getting even more wild and different with the number of cores, right? How does that impact what you do?
For exception handling, exceptions are per thread. So it doesn't really impact that model until you want to start raising exceptions in other threads or something like that, which I don't know if there's...
But, I mean, it's a question about, for example, in the C++ standard, they are discussing a lot about what to do if a thread raises an exception, and does that exception get transmitted after the thread send?
Which is exactly why, you know, and I remember during those long kind of email threads with Chris Broom on the old alias that's no longer there, user.
URT,
But that was like one of the questions that initially brought it up. Somebody asked, how do I handle exceptions that are happening in a different thread? I don't know.
I don't think we have the answer quite yet.
Yes. But just don't do a catch-all. Just stop.
Right.
But if you're firing up a bunch of threads and one of them dies because of an exception, you bring down the whole process.
Yeah.
So it's
tough. Thus, people using catch-all.
Yeah.
But don't recommend using it.
No. Not in this case. I'm sure that they are going to come up with very good guidelines there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And one of the traits of C++ usually is giving enough latitude to the user. So if you want to choose a thread that is going to bring down the entire process, then you choose that thread.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
In a sense, the CLI sure is only exception to report error only. C++ is a lot of other methods. Mm-hmm. There sometimes are legacy, like, I don't know, I mean, just R-NO in CRT, it's not that great, or mm-hmm. get last error in Win32. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not a great model for especially multi-thread thing.
Sure.
Still, R-NO is per thread and so on, but doesn't play very well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exceptions are, I mean, a modern technique to really transmit exceptional keys, not error keys, like cannot open a file.
So that actually brings up a great question. What is the difference between an exception? I mean, I know we keep saying the exceptional case, but if you can't open a file, so if the whole purpose of your mechanism is to open a file and to make an update, if you can't open the file, should the process continue?
I think it depends really what the case is, right? If the user give you the file name and you can't open it, throwing an exception is probably not appropriate. But if it's a file that you're expecting to be there, mm-hmm. and it happens not to be, I mean, that should be a rare situation, right?
Okay.
Exception might be the appropriate way of handling that.
Okay.
And again, with IOStream, for example, you can or get a return, I mean, get an error code,
mm-hmm.
or if you decide that you can throw an exception at that point, right?
Somebody might have, and since we're entering the world of distributed, like really distributed computing with the internet and service-oriented model and all those things, now probably people aren't going to be writing C++ as much to do their web kind of stuff. But they might.
So the server side, for example.
Exactly. So I guess what I'm saying is that if I call a function in another module that opens up a file for me,
I mean, that's again,
it should return an exception or an error code.
Right.
Okay. I hear you. This is why I'm saying this is a hard problem.
It is a hard problem, and I think it depends. It depends on the module, right?
It's the modules. I mean, the problem is that you're passing across modules.
Right.
Sure.
And if they're... You are calling a COM module, they never throw back exception. They always give you an extra result.
Right.
And you should stick to that. It's completely
fine. Throwing exceptions across CLLs is something you have to be careful about. Because if they're not using the same CRT, there could be a lot of problems in doing that.
Yeah.
So if you're controlling both sides and you're controlling both DLLs and they're always versioned the same, might be okay. But in general, throwing exception across the LL is there's a lot of risks.
It is a problem, yeah.
Sure.
We are definitely looking into that. I mean, a lot of things across the LL are not so easy to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And definitely going forward, we should improve at least the situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only throwing exception, passing data across the LL, sometimes mm-hmm. it's a bit tricky. And, I mean, for example, the CLR with the C-sharp VB, so they did a very good job there because the metadata is the same and they ensure the data structure is the same. We are not yet there. I mean, you can do it in a few ways in C++ with COM or with other things, or you can create your own COM.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there are a lot of ways that the C++ give you to ensure this. You can version a struct.
Excellent.
And we are going to, in the libraries team, we are going to try to expose more of these things to make easier this process. At least give kind of a model that works. Mm-hmm. Then people can always play it around. It's always C++ in the end, so.
Sure.
That's the good and the bad.
You got it. That's very cool stuff. And, of course, the compiler will optimize away potentially bad decisions that you've made.
Right, or trying to.
Or trying to.
Okay.
That must be a hard game to play. But you just look at the patterns and kind of you figure out based on your complicated algorithms.
Common things that are showing up and trying to make the code fast, even if it looks inefficient or there's some inefficiency. And
cool. So now let's talk about, because the topic is exceptions and error handling.
Right.
So if I do a try, catch, and then throw in a catch,
mm-hmm.
or throw in a finally,
right.
That would be a terrible. So throw in a finally is obviously ridiculous, because you'd always throw. But you throw in a catch, maybe you want to, I didn't catch this. So in other words, in my catch, I have code that will specifically deal with a out-of-range exception,
mm-hmm.
but nothing else. So I'm going to take the object you give me and throw it back out to you.
Right.
That's a standard practice, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's fine as long as you're kind of like somewhat finished handling the exception you were already handling. Otherwise, I mean, that exception is never going to be handled.
But there is a good point. For example, let's say your destructor throws. That is something you don't see, but it's going to be called here when you throw this exception. the compiler for you is going to go on whatever table they have, mm-hmm. and they're going to call this destructor. If this destructor throws at this point, mm-hmm. the C++ standards tell us in the moment you have to terminate the program. Right. Because the destructor during unwinding mm-hmm. is not allowed to throw. So that's sure. why it's a very bad idea to throw in a destructor, no matter what.
Okay.
Just because like it means finally. Your
limit. Yeah, just like a finally. Right. So no matter what happens, always throw the succession. Oh, good.
Well, you'll start colliding on one at that time, and I think you start unwinding from that point. Yeah. We don't terminate, actually, not for a CH.
Ah, sorry, not for a CH.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. But for a C++, yeah, if you throw in the destructor during an exception,
yes.
then, yeah,
this will terminate. This is a bit different from the CLR model. The CCR model compounds the exceptions. It
right.
keeps an exception linked to the other, and it keeps on throwing the big chunk of stuff. And so you see one exception inside the other. I'm not 100% sure.
Sure.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. Sometimes I saw these three or four exceptions linked together.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you get some tricky part when you throw exception. The weirdest one is in a filter for a CH. In C++, we somehow go back, the new exception gets raised, and we start looking for a filter back in the try block that was enclosing. So let's... Yeah, that's a really tricky case. We have another try. We get an exception here. And we have a filter here, another filter. So say this one throws an exception. This one says, I'm not going to accept this exception. This one throws a new exception. We assume the exception originated from within that try block, because that try block hasn't been unwound yet. So we go back to that filter to handle the new exception, and then back to this one.
Ah,
wow. And that can cause some issues.
Sure, like out of memory.
Right. In the CLR, the model is actually different here, and I'm not sure that it's better. It seems better at first, but if you get the exception here, you go here, it doesn't accept the exception. You come here. If this causes an exception, that exception is ignored, and the new and they look for a new filter for the old exception.
Okay.
But if that was like a Stack Overflow or something, well, there's nobody is able. Everybody's going to get a Stack Overflow after. Yeah. So there are some problems there too. It seems more natural though than what
then
we have
back,
which
yeah
it's probably why you know Chris Broom was like, alright, enough of this, man.
Yeah.
I'm done with exceptions. I want to move on.
Yeah.
This is great. I mean, I've learned a lot today. So is there anything in Orcus specifically that you guys did? I mean, you mentioned Whidbey.
Not for exception handling, yeah. I think.
When did we change the
EHS
was
to
already
that was Whidbey.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Don't recall anything.
It's better to let this thing.
That's just the standard product team question.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did have actually a few optimizations, I think, for no throw cases.
We fixed a couple of bugs also. I remember Alan fixed a couple of bugs.
One of the way you can help optimize your code is to put an empty throw specification or use Deckel spec no throw for a function. Well, this one would not be a good one because it does throw. But,
that's all it does.
But in Orcus, I think there's a few cases where we'll do better than Whidbey when we're using no throw.
Yeah.
So is there? I mean, this could be interesting. I mean, is there a compiler switch I could use that says turn off error handling? In other words, I want to see how my program exception handling.
So if you don't use the H switch, you will. But if you have try blocks in your code, you're going to get a bunch of warnings that you have try blocks and you're not using exception handling.
Okay.
There's another switch also that we didn't mention, that I could quickly mention, is the EHC switch.
That's what I use.
The C tells the optimizer that C functions do not throw a C++ exception.
So
if we have...
functions, for example.
Mm. Right. So if we have a function that only calls C-style functions... we can optimize the exception handling of the objects around those function calls because we know those calls. Well, from the user is telling us those calls are not going to throw exceptions. So for CRT, like the normal CRT code or Win32 code or...
There's a lot of code out there.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
But sometimes it can be if you declare your C++ code with extern C and those actually throw exceptions, then you don't want to use that switch because that would be incorrect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But usually you don't do that. You leave the member.
It's pretty
rare,
right?
Yeah.
Well, this is great. I mean, cool. It's been fun talking to you guys again.
Of course, thanks. I'm going to also, when you do the thing, when you post this,
yeah,
I'm going to also add the link, the external link you can go to sign up. Because we say that Wattphone is going to get all the cool stack for you.
Yeah.
So you can go and record your application and so get
excellent.
All the cool stack from Wattphone. There's going to be a link there. So
perfect.
Wattphone team I got. So.
Thank you. That would be great. And maybe a link to Herb Sutter's book as well.
Yes, that's very important. Yeah, I remember that.
Herb needs a little more business, man. How's he doing these days?
He's doing pretty well. He's always around.
Yeah, I got to talk to him again sometime. I know he's working on something we can't talk about, but what else is he doing?
It's always
excellent.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, great to talk to you again, Louis.
Louis, nice talking to you.
Exception? L'exception?
L'exception.
Great, man. Thank you for your time, you guys.
Thanks for the attention to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.